Welcome back to the Growth in Jams podcast. My name is Saul and I'll be your host here again today. Today I sit down with one of my biggest role models in life, my brother Jay Salazar. We discuss the chronology of his life from childhood until now, which includes the lessons he has learned as a result of mistakes he has made along the way. Without revealing too much, topics covered include mistakes in varying degrees of severity, self-reflection, a return to faith, counting your blessings, combating ego inflation, and relationship advice. I hope you enjoy the show today. Welcome, Jay. For the listeners out there, Jay Salazar is my brother. He's someone I look up to a lot, and I'm really excited to talk with him today. Just to start, why don't you share a little bit about who you are, lay down your credentials, and maybe how you got here today?
Yeah, Saul, always giving me the kind words, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, like Saul said, name's Jay Salazar, and I'm technically the oldest out of all the siblings. I was blessed to come into Saul's life when I was about 8 years old. And since then, it's been an amazing journey. So I'm 25 years old. I live in Houston, Texas, where I'm a research and development engineer for Johnson & Johnson. And where I work is kind of an interesting facility where we focus on developing really crazy out there technologies for medical devices. And we're in this really unique position where, because we have J&J's support and we have this unique position with the medical center, we can work on technologies that will immediately change the standard of care. And instead of, you know, small innovations that big corporations will focus on, we will attack things that everybody says is crazy. And for me personally, selfishly, it's an amazing place to work. And the last 2 years since I've been here, I started January of 2019. The amount I've been able to grow as an individual, as an engineer, as a person, it has been absolutely fantastic. I literally could have not ended up somewhere better from college.
Awesome, man. I think the work that you do is incredible, and I think you are in an incredible position. To take a step back, to focus on how you got here first, why don't you share a little bit about the, I guess, upbringing that you've had, maybe the educational journey that you've had as well, anything that you think is related to how you got to this point in time in Houston that can, you know, stem as far back as you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the high level answer to that is by making tons of mistakes. Everybody can agree with. So a little bit about my childhood. I was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and I grew up there with my dad and mom. And from ages 5 to about 10, I lived in 4 or 5 different places. One of those including Spain, where I lived for 9 months, and then moving back to Baltimore, and then eventually moving over to the West Coast and living in San Francisco and Seattle. So I think as a kid, it was a little difficult because I wasn't really set in place. At my key development years, you know, 5 to 8 or 9 years old, when you start making your friends and you start getting kind of your community together, I was jumping back and forth between different places. Fortunately and unfortunately, when I turned 9, my dad and mom decided to get divorced for reasons that make so much sense to me now. I try and think about them together and it doesn't make sense. It's polar opposites. And again, I'm sure people can understand that as well. But when I was 9, I ended up in San Antonio, where, you know, I grew up for the majority of my life, you know, graduated high school there before moving on to college. And I was finally able to build this community as a kid. And I still have friends that I met at 9 years old when I first moved into my neighborhood, that one of them, I'm going to go stand in their wedding soon. And it was great for me as a kid to finally settle down, I guess, and from 9 to 18 to be able to hold people in my life that I love and that support me and want me to be better. But of course, in that time, I also hung out with the wrong people. And I kind of started in high school. I was always a super nerdy kid. Anybody in my family was. We all loved math. My mom's a math teacher. My dad's a doctor. And we loved doing homework. I hate to say it, but we loved doing homework. We loved being in school. I was in the chess club in like middle school. I mean, nice. Really, we really just liked doing really nerdy things. And obviously, in high school, that translates to hanging out with a specific crowd of people where they're all very intelligent and they're all great people to be around, but you're obviously kind of excommunicated, I guess, the cool people in quotations, right? And every kid in high school wants to be cool kid. Every kid wants to be popular. And so freshman, sophomore, junior, high school, still kind of in this awkward stage where I was super tall and like 120 pounds. And I hadn't really learned how to be social with the cool kids yet. You know, I've always been an athlete. I've played soccer my entire life. You know, I played baseball when I was a kid as well. But my soccer team, everybody went to different schools. So I was never really heavily involved with that group until I started playing soccer for Brandeis my senior year. And I was on the varsity team with those guys. That's when I really started to make lots of dumb mistakes. And again, you know, you're working your whole high school career to get into the group, the popular group, where you walk around school and everybody knows who you are. And it's this weird fake feeling that feels so awesome when you're in high school, because in high school, that's your entire world. I mean, You show up, you're there all day, especially, and then on the weekends you have your soccer games and stuff like that. And it's this feeling of like awesome power almost, where your ego is like through the roof. So anyways, in my key nerd years and, you know, freshman through junior year of high school, I started dating a girl named Gabby. And everybody in my family knows this story, but just for the sake of the podcast, I can break down into a little bit. Again, when I was a good kid and respectful and nice, you know, Gabby and I were really happy together. And long story short, when I became a senior and I started hanging around this different group of people, I started getting more attention from other women. I made some very critical mistakes that made my life and you know, made Gabby's life very difficult at that point in time. And I hate to say it, but I'm so grateful that those mistakes happened as a 17, 18 year old, because they taught me valuable lessons about who I want to be as a person and then who I want to surround myself with in my life. And again, I think every person has that moment in their life when they look in the mirror and they think about where they are, how they're living their life every day, and the level of respect that they're giving to other people. And when you have this realization where you pretty much say you don't want to be a piece of shit and you want to go to bed and you want to be proud of yourself every night and you want to be happy with the people that are in your life, and making those mistakes in high school and then kind of getting a fresh start and going off to college was like a really, really nice way to close a chapter of, you know, one section of my life, close the 18-year-old chapter for myself and then move on and start fresh, start new. So yeah, so I graduated Brandeis in 2014, and then I decided to start my college career at the University of Washington in Seattle. Ever since I lived there, and then the past years of just visiting, Seattle is my favorite place in the entire world for so many reasons. I mean, but most importantly, the mountains. I mean, being able to walk out your front door and look at two different mountain ranges and take a 20-minute drive and be totally immersed in these massive peaks. And it's a sight that is so beautiful and so addicting that even now, sitting here in Houston, you know, humid, hot, flat environment, I dream of being in Seattle. Unfortunately, my job isn't in Seattle or else I would be there right now. But that was kind of like the main factor for me. I was like, let's move to Seattle. Let's get this fresh start. Let's escape all the mistakes that I've made in high school, mistakes that I've learned, but let's escape and let's start fresh with new people in a new environment. So that was kind of the main motivation. And I moved to Seattle, and moving to Seattle has its own challenges too. One being paying for school. Fortunately, my family's always agreed to help me and support me. But when you're talking about paying out-of-state tuition versus in-state tuition, anything you can do to give back to your family so they don't have to pay as much, take advantage of that. And what I decided to do was go to school part-time and then work full-time so I could establish my residency in Washington within a year. And then we start saving $25,000-$30,000 a year for school. So I didn't really get the full, you know, University of Washington experience because the majority of my time was going to working as a waiter at a nearby bar. But I did get to experience living in the city. I think that was very valuable, and its own mistakes came with that as well. you know, because San Antonio is not a small city, but where we lived in Helotes and Bernie. Mm-hmm. Those are really small areas. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of Seattle. I'm living in West Campus. I'm in the middle of all of it. And then again, working with people that are in the city, I mean, it was just really easy to get distracted. And again, I moved to Seattle to get this fresh start, but it's really easy to get distracted and then just start. Again, I was hanging out with the right people, but just like staying out till 4 a.m. every night. At that time, I smoked hookah like a degenerate. I mean, it was... And again, it was really just because there's nothing else to do for me. I mean, at 18, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't go to a bar. And Seattle's not as forgiving as Texas is with like letting 18-year-olds into bars and clubs. And so I would get off work at 10, 11 at night after being there since 4. go to the International District in Seattle, which is not known as the safest place, and just hang out with people at different hookah bars and different restaurants in that area. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think was the best about it is that I learned how to socialize and I learned how to connect with different groups of people, which was fascinating for me. I mean, I'll be completely honest, I was definitely the only person from Texas in that area. And, you know, I was referred to as like Texas white boy and stuff like that. But it was really good to like meet some lifelong friends. I mean, Elijah is one of the guys I met in the International District randomly, and he's one of my best friends to date. So I'm super blessed from that aspect. But again, the big thing that I was struggling with was time management and prioritizing my studies as opposed to fun and enjoying the city. And so again, getting home at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. every night, drinking because, you know, you're an 18-year-old college kid, and then sleeping until 11, missing my classes, and then going to work at 2. I mean, that was kind of my daily schedule. Fortunately, I still did okay in school. I mean, we're talking like B plus and A's, not to my full potential, but just enough to get by. But I really never went to the university. And that was something I was definitely missing from that experience. And again, I'll say about 6-7 months at this point, or starting in like January of 2015, is probably the worst mistake I've ever made in my life. And I'll be honest, all through high school, all through living in Seattle, every time I had anything to drink, I drove home. I had this instinct that if my car was somewhere, it didn't matter how I felt, I had to get my car home. And I would convince myself that I'm okay. And, you know, my friends would say, hey, Jay, we're going to take you home. And I took it as like a challenge. I was like, oh, well, they're telling me no, which means yes.
Yeah.
And it means that, or they're challenging me and saying like, oh, Jay, you're a lightweight or something like that. Again, things that would activate my ego and make me convince myself that I need to get my car home. So fast forward to January 2015, as an 18-year-old in Seattle, I get pulled over at 2 a.m. for driving. And to be completely honest with you, I was driving home completely blacked out. And I can't really talk about the night very much because I only remember a couple of details. I mean, the last thing I remember was sitting down and looking at a Gatorade bottle, and Elijah was holding my keys and he said, Jay, I'm going to drive you home. And I said, okay. And then he set my keys down next to me. And I guess next thing you knew, I was in my car driving home. And so again, that's my last memory. And then the next thing I remember, I'm in my grandparents' house the next morning. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for reference, my grandparents, they live in Bellevue, Washington, which is about 30 minutes, maybe 15 minutes east of Seattle. And since I lived in Washington, I had a Washington ID, which had my grandparents' address listed on it. And so I don't really remember a lot of the details of the night, but from what I read, what happened is the police officer wanted to stop me because I went an eighth of a tire over the shoulder on I-5, which is one of the busiest highways in the U.S. At about 2 a.m., tons of traffic on the road. Once he turned his lights on, apparently I kept driving for 2 more miles. Couldn't tell you why, but again, I think that I was just so zoned out that I was just so set on getting home. So he followed me for about 2 miles, and I actually didn't stop driving until a taxi cab pulled in front of me. And I guess instinct kicked in for me to slow down and move over to the side. But after that, they took me to their police unit, asked me a bunch of questions, and I'll just share a couple of them because they're so stupid. The first one, obviously, is, have you been drinking? And apparently, I looked directly at the cop and I said, oh, yeah. Again, completely unconscious state, but that's my first answer is, oh, yeah. And then the next thing he asked me was, well, how much have you had to drink? And I guess I looked at him at that point and I said, oh, about 26 Pullman pulls. And he asked me what a Pullman pull was. And I said, oh, about a 4-second gulp. So again, I'm looking at a police officer at 18 years old and pretty much giving him his case to him, right? But I almost think that was like a blessing in disguise too. I mean, when I was pulled over, number one, I shouldn't have been driving in general, but number two, because I was so cooperative, after they took me in and they're actually about to put me in a drunk tank and hold me overnight, I started getting really sick, or just throwing up and stuff like that. And they actually decided to send me home and send me to my grandparents' house. So instead of having to spend a night in jail, intoxicated and, you know, waking up there as opposed to waking up in my grandparents' house, I kind of looked at that as like a small blessing in a really shitty situation. Mm-hmm. The only unfortunate part of that is they brought me to my grandparents' house at 4 a.m. So the first people that had to grab their grandson was my grandparents at 4 a.m. And I couldn't even get out of a taxi cab. I mean, they had to carry me out. And anyways, so kind of a long story. But I remember waking up the next morning And I still didn't really know what had happened. I was more just like, oh, I guess I drove to my grandparents' house last night. Like, that was dumb of me. And then I was like looking around the room and I was feeling like shit. And I looked on the dresser and I saw my ID out with a piece of paper next to it. And then it's like all these memories rushed back to me and I started to remember the entire night. And at first I was sitting there and beating myself up and saying like, it's not fair. And, you know, I know so many people that drive drunk and don't get pulled over, like these really, really bad thoughts. And then after like 2 or 3 minutes of doing that, I paused for a second. I was like, holy shit, I could have killed someone. Mm-hmm. And that single thought is something that stuck with me my entire life. I mean, I'll get 10 DUIs over killing someone, right? I mean, someone will get hundreds. I mean, I don't really know how to say that, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there is nothing worse than endangering someone because of your own stupidity. Mm-hmm. And that was the only thing that I could think of. Even going through the trials and eventually getting charged, and I had to serve 48 hours in county as part of my punishment and pay tons of fines and all those things, I didn't care. I mean, number one, I had my family support me, which was great. They helped me through all of that. But number two, I could not get out of my mind that because of me, I endangered everybody that was on the road. I didn't even care that I endangered myself. It was mostly that I was so irresponsible that I could have woken up and who knows, man, like I could ran into a mom that has a kid in the car. I mean, not to get dark, but those are the thoughts that were going through my head. And yeah. And again, I had that realization. You look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, okay, great. Well, you moved here to become a better person. And now you just did it probably even shittier thing than you did in high school. And those thoughts can take you to some dark places sometimes because you really start to think about like, what's the purpose of me being here? What's the purpose of my life if I just continue to do dumb stuff? So I was kind of fighting with this for a couple months after I was convicted and all those things. And sitting there, one random day, again, in beautiful Seattle, like having a coffee or something. And I'm just trying to think about the next steps of my life and where I want to be. And I just miss my family. I was with my grandparents in Seattle, which is great, but I miss my family. At the time, even though through all the mistakes I made in high school, I was still dating Gabby as well. So I miss being around her. And I was just looking at like what my next year would look like in Seattle. And that is, I was going to have 3 years of high risk insurance because of my DUI. It's going to have a breathalyzer in the car for 8 months. And then my license is going to be suspended for 6 months. So really crappy situation. Again, justified because of what I did. But I had an opportunity. If I were to move back to Texas before that suspension period, switch back my residency to Texas, get a Texas license, get Texas tags again, then a lot of consequences that would have come from getting a DUI in Seattle, they don't hold as intense or as significant in Texas. So for the reasons of being with family, being with the girlfriend at the time, and then also having this opportunity to kind of click reset again and give myself a third chance to kick off where I wanted to be, I took it. And originally the goal was to go to A&M to be with my girlfriend at the time. Thank God that didn't happen. But after applying to a couple schools in the area, I just actually randomly picked Baylor. And that's where I finished off undergrad and graduated back in 2018. And I applied to TCU, A&M, UT, and Baylor. And Baylor was the only school I got into because of the amount of credits I had. Like I said, since I was only doing part-time in Seattle, I only left with about 14 credits. And a lot of those bigger universities, they want you to have a year or two of full credits before you transfer into their institution. But Baylor didn't care. They said, yeah, great, come on in. They gave me a transfer scholarship. And that's how I ended up in Baylor and, you know, in Waco. It was really, really random. And I think about where my life is now because I went to Baylor, and I couldn't be more thankful that I didn't even tour it. You know, I just picked it. I signed at a random place, West Campus Lofts, and I showed up to Waco, moved in, and kind of just started my life there. And Baylor, I would say, is really where I started succeeding and I started living up to my full potential. And most importantly, I surrounded myself with people that I wanted to be around. Unfortunately, when I moved back, girlfriend at the time, well, we didn't work out for very, very obvious reasons that just took lots of self-reflection to understand. That's definitely a topic for another conversation. We could spend hours talking about that. But I showed up and I actually hit reset. Now I kind of, all the negative things that have happened in my life to the back of my brain where I was still processing them, but more just focusing on the future and being excited for the future. And it all started that first year. Again, I randomly signed at West Campus Lofts and my roommate, his name was Austin Mason. He also randomly signed at West Campus Lofts. And it turned out that he already had this well-established connection at Baylor. He was a transfer student like myself. He transferred from ACU. And so he was kind of starting off fresh at Baylor as well. But his brother, Ethan, who is one of my best friends now. I mean, lives here in Houston and we hang out constantly and I'm really close with his family. But Ethan was his brother and had already been at Baylor for 2 years. And so I was just super lucky. I happened to live with Austin. I mean, Austin's a best friend as well, but I met a lifelong best friend in Ethan. And day two, I was fully integrated into Baylor already. I mean, mm-hmm. I was attending Greek life events and they were already in the process of rushing me. I mean, it was just this really cool wave of exposure to a really close-knit group. Again, Seattle's massive. And because I wasn't a part of the university, really, only going part-time, I didn't get to experience anything of like the tradition of UW and students and the on-site activities. But with Baylor, only 12,000 people in the entire university in small Waco, Texas, we got this feel of a university with this close-knit community. I started meeting all these people, but being smart about who I decided to hang out with long-term. Obviously, there's lots of distractions at university and lots of distractions specifically in Greek life that you can kind of start going down that scary path again. But because of the mistakes that I've made in the past, because of, you know, getting a DUI and then drinking like a degenerate and all those things in the past, you know, I was able to kind of turn my head to it and just focus on the positive things that I wanted to surround myself with for that first year living at West Campus and meeting all those people and getting involved in Baylor. I was just really able to figure out who I wanted to be. I didn't mention earlier, but at the time, I wanted to follow in my dad's footsteps and I wanted to be a physician, specifically a surgeon. Not sure what kind I wanted to be, but that was always the goal. So at UW and then my first year at Baylor, I was going down the pre-med track with major in mathematics and then pre-med discipline or whatever. But again, in that first year being there, I realized that the only reason why I wanted to do that is because I thought it would make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And being surrounded with this positive group, learning more about myself, I just was realizing and priorities changed. It wasn't so much about making tons of money in my life. It was more, I want to do something that I wake up every day and I'm pumped to do it. And mm-hmm. it fills me with this like positive energy and it makes me motivated. And that my priority changed from making a lot of money to I want to wake up every day and love what I do. And in that first year, I was like, okay, pre-med is clearly not the track for me. I hate all my classes. You know, I was doing well, but I hated all my classes. And I just kind of looked around at the different programs that Baylor offered. And I kind of stumbled into biomedical engineering too. Again, I was always good at math because of obviously my mom and my dad and all those things. But if I would have transferred straight into an engineering degree, it would have set me back 2 years. So I wouldn't have graduated till this year, just thinking about it that way, or I guess end of 2020. But Baylor had just started a biomedical engineering track literally the year before, where 40% of your class hours are focused on pre-med classes like OCHEM and biochemistry and genetics and all those things. And so just kind of picked it. I said, okay, great. Well, it's only going to set me back 6 months. And it kind of seemed interesting because it ties in, you know, medicine and engineering. So let's just give it a shot. I transferred into that. And again, I'm going to talk about a couple of things that were just like God's gifts, like that are unbelievable. I mean, I even look at my DUI as almost like a gift just because the lessons that it taught me, the fact that no one was hurt. And it was kind of one of these free lessons, I like to say, one of these free lessons where I got to do a lot about who I was and how I acted without serious consequences, right? There's obviously consequences of having a DUI, but they're not serious when you think about what else could have happened.
Yeah.
Again, hidden blessing from God right there. Just really put me on the right track. And when I look at that decision 4 years ago, and I see where I am now, I just feel so blessed. And I mean, I'll talk about my job a little bit later on, but it's amazing. I will say, and I promise you, I wasn't prompted to say this, but the true blessing of going to Baylor was meeting NECA. And the way that we met each other is actually really interesting. So like I said, my first year, I lived with Austin and I was just finishing off, you know, my relationship with Gabby. I mean, there was obviously some complications in that year. It's not like we just cold cut the communication. Like, she'd been in my life for 6 years. I'd been in her life in 6 years. There was a lot of history and it was really, really hard to break that bond. I mean, even though we were officially broken up at the beginning of that year, I mean, I still called her, she still called me. And just because we had this closeness, this connection that even though I'd say we weren't in love with each other anymore, we just had to have each other in our life just as like a safety net where if I was in trouble, I would call her or something like that. But it, obviously a kind of connection like that is really unhealthy because you're not together, but you're together. I mean,
yeah.
So it's a really, really unhealthy thing to be a part of. And I never really knew how to break it. Well, halfway through the year, Austin, obviously, I had been filling him in and he was the guy I'd met too, right? And we lived together. So we would talk about our struggles and he was dating a girl at the time too. So we got to kind of connect about a lot of that. Well, for a couple of months, Austin goes out one night and he comes back home and he's like, dude, you have to see this girl that I met tonight. And I was like, I mean, sure, whatever. I was like, okay, cool. I don't really care. And he shows me this picture and I looked at him. I said, fuck you. And he said, whoa, whoa, why? I said, Austin, dude, you just showed me the picture of my perfect girl. I was like, this is literally the girl I've been telling you that I'm interested in. And again, I hadn't met Nick at this point. This is purely just a picture. But when I saw her, I can't even describe the feeling of, wow, this is the one. And NECA doesn't believe me that this is my reaction, but it was literally a picture. I didn't know anything about her. I didn't even know what the sound of her voice was. And this may not be completely appropriate to say it, but it was literally like God told me in that moment, like, this is the girl you're going to marry. Mm-hmm. And it's super dramatic. And like, she's going to be super embarrassed when she hears this, but it's like, it was like literally God told me in that moment, saw the picture. He's like, that's the girl you're going to marry. And my reaction to tell Austin was, dude, why are you going to talk to my perfect girl? And I guess we had this like little small interaction. He's laughing because he thinks I'm joking, but I could not get her out of my mind after that. And I kept telling myself, I was like, wow, this sucks, because if she comes over here, she's coming over as Austin's date. And then you got the bro code that you have to follow, where even if it doesn't work out with them, it's not like I can pursue her, because you just can't do that. And so now I'm like, well, now I've just lost out on my perfect girl, because my roommates decided to talk to her. And anyways, a couple nights later, she comes over with him. And Austin's a little drunk. And at that time, I'm a pledge. So I'm driving people around. So I actually had to pick them both up and then take them back to the apartment. And Austin falls asleep on the couch. And Nick and I are talking back and forth. And oh my God, dude, she's so cute. She's like smiling at me and just talking about who she is. And the whole time I'm like, okay, don't look like you're falling in love with her. Don't look like you're falling in love with her. Just calm down. I'm like watching my breathing so I don't act all nervous in front of her, but I'm freaking out, right? I mean, I can't get out of my head that like I'm talking to this girl right now. And so we're talking back and forth, and then she's like, can you drive me home? And I said, sure, yeah, I can drive you home. Secretly, I'm like, yes, I'm going to drive her home, you know? we get in the car and she's like talking and being all sweet. And then I just can't get out of my head. I'm like, dude, this is so inappropriate. I have to make sure I don't flirt with her or anything, because again, she came over as Austin's date. So of course I was like, what's the number one thing I can talk about that will immediately turn her off? And I said, oh, my ex-girlfriend. So let's just talk about my ex-girlfriend. And so the entire car ride, just about like 15 minutes back to her place, I just start talking about my ex-girlfriend. But I don't mention her as my ex. I just mentioned that as like, oh, hey, yeah, there's this girl that's been in my life for a while. And obviously that instantly turns NECA off to any other conversation, because she's like, all right, this dude is some loser that's all caught up on this girl. So anyways, that was my first conversation with NECA, was talking about my ex-girlfriend. And when she eventually got out of my car and went to her apartment, I took a deep breath and I was like, well, I respect Austin, so I did the right thing, but I'm super distraught right now, because I also know I just ruined any future chance. So they didn't work out, obviously, because I'm with her now. But like 2 or 3 days later, after that night, NECA had decided that she wasn't interested in Austin anymore. Now, when she tells it from her perspective, she says that she wasn't interested because she saw me. But I think that she's lying, obviously. I mean, there's probably some other reason. But it's funny when she talks about that night from her perspective, because she talks about how she had this same reaction where she saw me and she was like, oh, wow, I want to know who that is. And like, I'm really into him. And NECA had never had a boyfriend before. No one had really ever captivated her where she was interested in pursuing them. So she tells it from her perspective. So it's crazy to hear kind of the similar reactions that we had about each other, but we didn't know that we were having the same reactions. And so from her perspective, when I was telling the story about my ex-girlfriend, she was just absolutely crushed, because she wanted me to sit in the car and flirt with her or ask her out or whatever it is. And I just did the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so after NECA and Austin decided to stop talking, apparently there was a really aggressive text sent by Austin to NECA, just upset that they weren't going to talk anymore, something like that. And NECA thought that I wrote the text, because Austin had mentioned that he had friends help him. And so NECA just immediately thought it was me. And so for about a year after that, she like almost hated me. Not actually hated me, but just mad at me. But yeah, we had this year in between where we don't talk, and then kind of fast forward to junior year. So it's my second year at Baylor. I'm now moving into a house with Ethan, who's Austin's brother, and then two other of our close friends, Jason and Jeff. And this was like, now I'm in a house with my fraternity brothers, and now I can enjoy myself safely. And of course, like any house of dudes is going to do, we threw parties all week. I mean, we had this massive house, one of the biggest houses for our entire fraternity. So we started out the week with Margarita Monday, classic Monday party of welcome week, the week before school. And that day we were kind of running around, and I was on and off the phone with Gabby that whole day, because she was upset about something. And anyway, we need to go pick up this table for the party. He's like, we're going to go to this girl's house. It's called Babe Cave. So I'm like super excited. I'm like, yeah, let's go to Babe Cave. And I walk in and Nek is sitting on the couch. And again, I haven't seen her in like a year. And again, it takes my breath away right away as usual. But she was really uncomfortable when I first walked in too, because she also hadn't seen me in a year. And so I walked in and we were all just talking to them. And you know, Nekka wasn't really talking to me. And I didn't know if because she was mad at me or whatever it is. It doesn't really matter at this point. But we invite them all to the party. And they're all like, oh yes, we'd love to be there. And Jace and I leave and get everything ready. And I tell Jace when we get home, I was like, dude, we need to make sure Nekka comes because tonight is the night. I was like, it's been a year since Austin. That doesn't matter anymore. I'm like, finally single, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, with slight conversations back and forth. I'll talk to Austin beforehand and make sure he's okay. But he's like, I'm making my move tonight. So I remember I start drinking tequila because I'm nervous, man. I'm so nervous. I'm finally going to talk to this girl and ask her out. And I like don't even know how I'm going to approach her. And I've never really had a problem meeting new people, not just women, but in general, like meeting new people. I'm usually pretty open and social. But I was just freaking out, thinking about what I had to say. And anyways, she walks in probably about 9 or 10 p.m. where I've already a couple of drinks in. This is from my perspective. She will completely disagree with me, but she walks in and I swear to God, time freezes, man. It freezes. And the only thing, everybody else in the room blacks out. It's so cheesy, but everybody else in the room blacks out. And I swear we locked eyes for like a minute and a half. And I'm sitting down on the counter and I'm looking at her and I'm like, this is awesome. This is awesome. This is awesome. And she comes up to me and says, hi. And I freak out like I'm a little boy, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, she just said hi to me. And I proceed to drink more tequila to get more courage. And long story short, I finally go up to her. And my pickup line was, do you still hate me? Which worked like a charm. And nice. We ended up talking for 30 minutes or 45 minutes that night. And when I say talking, it was actually just me being an idiot and repeatedly saying, can I take you out? You're so beautiful. which apparently worked, but those are only words coming from my mouth was, can I take you on a date? You're so beautiful. And then like 5 years later, man, I mean, I remember that night so well because again, it's our entire relationship has always been like this breath of fresh air and truly a blessing. I mean, you know, I haven't really talked about like growing up and like what my faith was very much, but I grew up Catholic with my family and we were really, really good about going to church and having conversations about God at our house. But when my parents got divorced, those conversations didn't stop, but they became a lot less frequent. And I think it was because, you know, everybody was in the middle of divorce from my parents' perspective. They were just trying to figure out like what their belief system is too, right? They've been 17 years together. They had a belief system united and now they have to kind of figure out what their own journey is. And so a lot of those conversations stopped in the house. And then my education for religion, for Catholicism stopped. And I was never confirmed. I had my first communion and everything as a kid, baptized, but I was never confirmed. I stopped going to church when I was like 11 consistently with the occasional Easter or Christmas, like a lot of people do. So between 14 and 20 or whatever, I didn't forget about religion. I wasn't actively communicating with God. I wasn't actively participating. I'm never losing my faith, just not actively participating. And it was when I met Nekka, who comes from an Indian family that upholds culture and heritage and religion. Her family and her were grown up Christian, Indian Orthodox specifically, and they have this really unique, beautiful connection to God. And again, another huge blessing about being with her is God became the number one priority in my life again, where, you know, even the little things, like you're about to eat, man, and you just think about like, wow, I'm here and I'm here eating this great food. I'm with great company. I'm at Baylor. And you just start thinking about all the blessings in your life. And then obviously all the mistakes and struggles that led you to get here. But the fact that if you just stop for a moment and take a deep breath and realize the small little blessings that are in front of you, it really reaffirms my faith in general. And that not like I'm being individually rewarded, but just that by taking a deep breath and actually recognizing all the blessings that are in front of us, it's so easy to throw my belief into God. And and then the level of conversations I was able to have it too. I mean, again, probably the number one blessings about being with Nekka was bringing God back into my life and then God into our relationship and being able to work together to become better versions of ourselves and to constantly improve who we are while, you know, giving our thanks back to God. That's probably the most straightforward way I can say it. And but without her, I would have never gotten back to that. So scratch just the blessing in my personal life, my relationship life, but just being able to bring back faith as a priority in my life was just one of the many blessings that she's given me. And, you know, my past relationship, again, Gabby was an amazing girl, right? I mean, we just really weren't right for each other. That's it. And I was young. She was young. we made mistakes, but I'm always going to thank her and I'm always going to cherish the memories that we had together and who she taught me about who I am and how I want to live my life. And so I'm really thankful for her. And NECA was really my second relationship, right? It was my second long-term relationship with someone that I love and cherish. And the learnings that we've had together has been great. And honestly, the number one thing that I've learned is just being able to establish a safe place to communicate with each other about anything. I mean, I'm sure you and Carissa are the same way, man. Like being able to have this safety net where you can sit down and you can say, hey, Nets, or, you know, hey, Carissa, this is going to be hard to tell you, but I just need to tell you because I'm struggling with it right now. And having someone that can look at you and you can see it, right? When you tell someone something that is upsetting, they have a moment where they process it and they're like, wow, this is kind of upsetting information. But then, you know, who they are as a person really shows when they're able to digest that information and then look right back at you and say, how can I help you? Yeah. Or how can I help this situation? And obviously you have to do it for them as well, right? I mean, it has to be back and forth, but being able to do that is something I had never experienced before. And it was so easy with NECA from day one. I mean, again, we talked about it before offline too. And Chris, it was just day one. It was so easy and it was, they accepted us. I mean, NECA accepted me for my mistakes. I mean, her family accepted me. It was this really safe place where I could just thrive and then we could thrive together. And we tell everybody now, you know, 5 years down the road, you know, we've had our struggles, right? Every couple has the struggles. We've done long distance, which is just unbelievably tough. But through all that, we've just maintained this really safe level of communication that allows us to break down when we need to, but allows us to speak freely without criticism. I mean, obviously, you know, have fights in between there, but just mostly because I'm being stupid, overreacting to something. But that level of communication is just amazing. And then the next part is with that communication is being able to learn. And so again, like I had my own biases coming out of my first relationship and things that I thought I did perfectly when clearly I was doing it not perfectly. And NECA has just always given me that ability to sit down and say, hey, Jay, I'm feeling this way. And I know you don't understand it, but I'm feeling this way because of you doing this or, you know, highlighting something that was upsetting her. And in the first year or two, I was like, well, you're wrong. And here's why I'm right. And it was like this competition, right? But as we grew together and as we became more comfortable with each other and that communication stayed a really high priority, I was able to sit down and put my own thoughts aside and be like, okay, why is NECA telling me this? Why is she sharing this feeling that she's having? And can I understand the root cause of it? And that root cause will change from conversation to conversation. But now that we're able to do that together, when we fight, it's like, okay, well, we fight and I'll have an initial reaction, right? I'll get defensive, which happens a lot. She'll say, Jay, it hurt me when you did this. And I'm like, wait, why did it hurt you? Like, what did... I didn't do anything wrong. And then now, like, instead of after multiple days, it's like after 5 or 10 minutes, I can sit down and be like, okay, so I know why I reacted because I was being defensive about myself, but let's try and figure out why NECA was having a reaction. And then we're able to have a much calmer conversation where we can diagnose the root problem together, which is fantastic. I've been talking about her a lot the last 20 minutes, so I'll move forward. But if I could put a conclusion to this entire conversation about school and relationships and mistakes and all those things is it's never too late. I mean, I'm only 25, so I'm really young as well. But I remember being 18 and just finishing high school. I remember being 19 with a DUI and I'm looking at myself and I'm like, wow, my life's over and there's nothing else that I can do. This is going to be with me for the rest of my life. And I made the mistake and it's done. I'm being really dramatic, but that's what I was thinking. But the best thing I can say is it doesn't matter what mistake you make, as long as you recognize that you made the mistake and you actively try and be better. Not perfect, right? No one's ever going to be perfect. And I make mistakes every single day. But I can say now I'm better than I was a year ago. I'm better than I was 4 years ago. And there's multiple ways of doing that. Self-reflection is one that I've kind of talked about a lot the last 30 minutes or so. But I would say the next thing is surrounding yourself with people in your life that want you to be better. Mm-hmm. And immediately for me, the person I'm the closest to in my life is obviously NECA. We've been together 5 years and she knows everything about me, probably more than my family knows about me, right? And just being able to rely on her as a partner, as a girlfriend, as a future wife, I mean, it excites me, man. It excites me for, again, my personal growth, but more what can we now do together? Because she is my family too. Yeah. And I'll ask what you think about it too, because for me, it's just the self-reflection aspect of it. And then who you surround yourself with has been the two things that have been my saving graces. And I wouldn't be sitting here in this room talking to you right now without both of those as major priorities in my life.
Yeah, 100%. Just to take a brief pause, I just want to say, thank you for sharing all of that, because it's extremely valuable information, and all that you've been through in your life, your entire life journey from its inception has been unique and valuable. And the wisdom that you've gathered along the way that you've shared here today is incredible. I think something that I want to highlight, because I think it's important, is that we share a lot of parallels within our life. And we've talked about this before. It's pretty interesting. But something that I think was really hard hitting is we're the kinds of people that have to make the mistake in order to learn. And I think that in making those mistakes, we've learned a lot. So yeah, just really want to thank you for being an inspiration in my life and a great role model, because it's through those mistakes that you've made and how you've come out of those mistakes that haven't necessarily precluded me from making my own mistakes, but have taught me how to react and how to bounce back in making my own mistakes. So all of those things that you've experienced have really played a great role in my life in becoming who I wanted to become. And in terms of role models that you and NECA are, I think you guys do a great job of highlighting what it means to be in love and to pursue each other and to want to be better for each other, because I think that is the ultimate goal, right? Is to have a soulmate that pushes you and challenges you to be better and makes you want to be better. So to get back to your question, or to the addition of how you said your saving graces were those two things, I like that you highlighted was your relationship with faith and the aspect that it's played now in your life. Because for me, that really was my saving grace. As much as it was Carissa and a support system and those built-in moments of reflection, for me, I don't think I would be here without knowing that forgiveness and mercy are very much allotted to us if we ask for it and want it. So yeah, thank you for those additional things that you shared, for the advice that you've given. Is there anything that you feel has been left out in terms of personal journey that you've been on that you want to share? You shared a lot, so I can definitely ask some more questions if need be.
Yeah, no, I've definitely rambled for for the last hour or so talking, but I just want to echo what you said as well. I mean, I love the kind words, man, and I'm so glad that Nick and I can be role models to you and Carissa. But I mean, I also have to say that you and Carissa are equally role models for us, and your journey for me as well. I mean, I think you're right. We have a lot of parallels in our life, and we made similar mistakes, obviously, in different situations, but again, man, I've seen your progress the last couple of years as well. And even sitting down and thinking about something as creative as putting together a podcast to share your experiences with the world, man. I mean, number one, I love you, right? You're my brother, you're my brother forever, obviously. But the maturity that you show is something I'm still trying to get. So like, huge shout out to you as well. And Carissa as well. I mean, you guys are both lovely people. And it's been great to watch your progression. And it's been great to watch your success, both in school. I mean, now about to attend law school, man. I couldn't be more proud of you. I'm so excited that all my siblings are blowing my accomplishments out of the water. It makes me so happy as an older brother. But I'm really excited to see the things that you're going to do in the future as well. But anyways, just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. But to answer your question, I mean, yeah, again, this personal journey, I've really just kind of focused on my past experiences. But I think a good way to wrap it up would be to talk about like what's available for me in the future. And so from a relationship perspective, I can tell you right now, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, Nick is my life. And when it's going to happen, I don't know. I mean, right now, I'd do it right now if I could. If there wasn't other logistics that had to be worked out, I mean, it would happen right now. But I think I'm really fortunate in that aspect that a lot of people don't have that security at this age. They don't know who their partner's going to be. They don't know who their family's going to be. And because I have that secured, not secured meaning like I'm not going to relax, but just secured because we have this ongoing growth together that I feel very confident we can continue to do for the years to come. It really lets me focus on, okay, from a career perspective, right? You know, how do I want to set up my career and then also my life so that eventually the number one goal is to support my family. Mm-hmm. And talking about where I work now and kind of stumbling into biomedical engineering school, even graduating, I actually didn't get this job until a week before I graduated. I had probably gotten turned down from 10 or 11 different engineering facilities just because, again, since I was doing BME, I didn't have the qualifications for, you know, mechanical engineering jobs. And I even looked at working at Lockheed and Dallas for aerospace. And again, great companies, I just didn't have the qualifications for. And again, like the couple of things I mentioned, I just kind of stumbled into this job. Like I said, my dad's a physician and I went to one of his conferences and I actually met an individual named Bruce Rosengard, who was in charge of this J&J Innovation Center, which is called Center for Device Innovation. I'm not sure if I mentioned that yet. And he kind of put me in contact with some of the individuals here. And then all of a sudden I was hired as an intern and given the opportunity to come in here. And even though I didn't have a lot of experience fresh out of school, I was the youngest one here by probably about 8 or 9 years. They gave me the opportunity and took full advantage of it, put everything in I could, all the lessons that I've learned from the past, all the support from NECA, from my family, friends. I mean, that it really helped motivate me to just perform as well as I could here. And the amount of experience that I've gained in the last 2 years, the amount of exposure has been unreal. And that's accounted to the support systems in my life. But I also want to give a shout out to the employees here, to the engineers here. I think every kid, when they graduate school, is looking for a mentor in their life. Whether or not they know who the mentor is, I mean, it doesn't matter. Just everyone wants to be mentored and, again, maximize their full potential. And I'm not sure if Scott will ever hear this, but Scott is an employee here at CDI who started right about the same time as me. And I can't thank him enough. I mean, just for your benefit, Scott's from Scotland. His name's Scott Sloss, and he's been in industry for 25 years in electronics. He did mechanical. He's been working at a company called LifeScan for a medical device sector for J&J for the past 10, 15 years. And then that's when he ended up here at CDI. And just being able to work with him every day, hear his awesome Scottish accent too, and then just like hear his mistakes too, right? I mean, you know, we all have our own mistakes and we learn from them, but we can also learn from other people's mistakes. We talked about that earlier. I mean, if we can surround ourselves with people that are able to articulate the mistakes that they made and the lessons that they've learned, then we can learn from those just through them. And it just makes us better and it makes us progress faster. And so I'm sitting here talking to you right now. I've been at CDI for 2.5 years. Again, lots of experience, lots of excitement. I mean, I'm not going anywhere soon. I love it here. And just thinking about how to set myself up for the next 5, even 10 years, again, staying with my family and then growing my professional career and also evaluating what I want to do. Right now, I love my job because I get a lot of exposure, but I also know that in 10 years, I don't want to be a purely technical engineer. I want to be heavily involved with entrepreneurship or even just standard business development for corporations. I mean, something that I can leverage my technical background with the financial aspect, with the business side of the company. I don't really know what the exact title is for that or what the right path to get there is, but I just know as long as I continue this trajectory, I like to use the term, as long as I continue riding the wave towards this eventual goal, it's very easy to reach. I just have to put in the time and just grow, grow, grow. And as long as every day I'm showing up to work, I get educated on one more thing, or every week I get educated on one more thing, then I'm just setting myself up for success. And I know it's hard because we're young and because we're trying to think 10 years down the road, sometimes it can seem really unreachable. And putting together, when someone says, okay, if you have a 5-year plan, what do you want to accomplish each year? Well, it's actually really hard for me to answer that question because I don't know. For me, it's very general. It's just like, okay, well, I just want to make sure that at the end of the year, I can list 10 things that I've improved on or 10 things that I've learned. It can be hard to put down concrete goals, but as long as I grow every year, I mean, that's going to be the number one thing I'm looking at. And then specifically, like I said, with my relationship with Scott and everything he's been able to do for me, I want to start getting involved, giving back now too. I mean, Nick and I are talking with some groups here in Houston right now that focus on mentoring high school kids that may not be coming from the best childhoods, best environments, best schools, but are looking to better their future. And so getting involved with them and helping them out and giving them our advice, teaching them the lessons and mistakes that we've made. I mean, just any way to give back because of all the people in my life that are giving back to me. I think that's the only way that we can really repay those people is just continue to pass on their lessons, continue to pass on their insight to other people. But yeah, just pause there. I'll pass it back over to you.
No, that's awesome, man. I think that's really great that y'all are looking into that avenue of paying it back to the people that don't have the experiences that we've all had. I think we're all very privileged for various reasons, right? But I think using that privilege and leveraging that privilege in order to give someone that doesn't have the same resources and opportunities, incredible. And I really liked what you said about passing on the mistakes that we've made, the knowledge that we've accrued through those mistakes and through our lives, because I think in being as young as we are, I think we both had very great opportunities to learn from mistakes that I don't think a lot of people have learned. And that's one of the reasons that I thought you were a perfect candidate for coming on the show, is just because most people have never been through what you've been through. And if they have, it's a good chance that they haven't learned what you have through it. I think you're wise beyond your years. And I think that the knowledge that you've taken out and the general outlook on life has been so great to watch the transformation over the years. Something that I think would be great to talk about before we wrap up is that just general advice for those listening that have struggled with maybe ego inflation are some of the root things that cause some of the problems or the mistakes that you've made in your life?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, parallel paths, right? I mean, every person has always experienced like this ego inflation, like you said. And everybody has an inside voice, right? Everybody has a voice in their mind that tells them when something's wrong. And it's like a warning, right? I mean, it's saying, mm-hmm. Hey, this is wrong. And, you know, when you're in certain situations, you ignore it and just do it anyways. But when you start listening to it, you realize that that voice is actually trying to help you. And so the first thing is, if you find yourself in these situations, and it's not like you're at a place, it's just like in a situation in general where you just look around and you see how you're acting, you see who you're around, and your voice is kind of setting off an alarm saying, hey, use me for example, Jay, why are you at a party at 18 drinking, fighting with your girlfriend and about to drive home? Mm-hmm. Why? Don't shut that voice off. Just try and talk to you. And you know, I wish at 18 or at 17, whatever it was, I just would have listened. And then it's almost crazy, but you have like a conversation with yourself, right? Where you're like, hey, why are you doing this? And if someone asked me at that time, or if I answered my voice and said, why are you doing this? I said, because it looks cool. That would have been my answer. And that is probably the dumbest thing that you can ever say, that it looks cool. And you want to fit in, and you want to be popular. And all those are just dumb things to convince yourself that what you're doing is appropriate. And that kind of ties into the next thing, where you need to be proud of who you are and having that self-reflection and looking yourself in the mirror and saying, my name is Jay Salazar and I love who I am. I love my life. I love the things that I do every day. And that can be really hard. That can be really, really hard to identify in yourself and to be able to have that level of self-reflection. And I'm still not perfect at it, right? I mean, there's still moments where I do things that I turn off my voice and I pretend not to think about how it makes me feel, but just being honest with yourself, allowing yourself to develop with that reflection. And at the end of the day, again, it's a simple question. Like, are you happy with who you are? Are you happy in general? Because even if you're caught in situations where you're turning off your voice, if you truly ask yourself, are you happy or not? So to answer your question specifically, right? For those that are struggling, for those that find themselves in situations that they're not who they are, or they're making mistakes, they're doing drugs, they're drinking and driving. I mean, whatever the case is, right? Reflection piece, right? Absolutely. But also see who your support system is, because if you can have someone, if you can bring someone in your life that you can look at them and you can say, I drink and drive, or I do drugs or whatever, and they can look at you and not judge you and just ask you a simple question. Why do you do it? And I mean, it could be counseling too. I've seen therapists in my life too, that they're really general conversations and they can get deeper. But when they ask you why, it's such a simple question, but it makes you really think about it. And when we turn up that voice in our head and, you know, we avoid looking at ourselves in the mirror, whatever the case is, it's because we don't want to ask ourselves that question, why? And just having that as a resource, I think, is massive. And then also having a great girlfriend in your life, having a great girl that loves you for who you are and allows you to express yourself, and she expresses herself as well, is really healthy. So I guess we'll put three bullet points on it from I'm thinking, right? Or three or four is, if you're struggling or if you see yourself getting in that position, just evaluate who's around you. Take the time to self-reflect and ask yourself why you want to do something and why it appeals to you. Three, make sure you're in a healthy relationship. And that doesn't just have to be with a girlfriend or with a boyfriend. It's a healthy relationship with your family. Are your friends, you know, are your friends healthy? You have a healthy relationship with your dog? Like, you know what I mean? Like just evaluating all those things in your life. And then number four, and I think I'd love to hear Saul's thoughts on this as well, but number four, count your blessings. And it wasn't until I met NECA and God became a focal point in our life that I was able to start picking up the small blessings in our life. And to me, it feels like small notifications that like, hey, Jay, you're doing the right thing. You're stepping forward and you're learning the lessons that you have. So here's, I don't want to say small rewards, but more just like small things to just let you know that I'm here, I'm watching you. And I see the progression that you're making and you are doing the right thing. Keep it up. And to take that moment to just see those blessings, identify them, and then be thankful for them, right? And like we said too, you know, being thankful and then passing it on is like, that's all that we can do, is just notice them, be thankful, and pass it on. And again, I want to hear your thoughts on that too. But that would be like the things that I would recommend to someone if they're going through like a similar trajectory as like me.
Yeah. Well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. And on that last point, that is 100% it. And I have definitely experienced that. I think my way of looking at it is like divine intervention and small little, like in bowling, right? little bumpers to let you know that you're going the right way and on the right path. And it's sometimes hard to recognize those because for a lot of me personally, like those bumpers, right, they haven't exactly been what I've thought was right for me or what I thought was my affirmation or my specific path. So being able to recognize that for sure and understand that everything in this high level sense is reciprocated in this world, right? The energy that you put into other people is received in specific other ways and it comes back around to you. So I think being able to recognize those blessings is huge. And it ties into that self-reflection as well, like taking a step back, being able to recognize that everything here is a gift. The mistakes that you make don't define you. And then being able to pick out how you've grown, the affirmations that have come along the way, and exactly which direction it's pointing you in life. So 100% well said. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to add that you feel that we didn't cover that you think is valuable or suggestions for resources on things or anything like that?
Yeah, just remind me next time to write up my answers and then have you articulate them.
No, I didn't do very much talking, but I think that it was good that way because I think your testimony is sufficient. It stands alone and is powerful enough as it is. I don't think anything that I could have added or articulated for you would have helped it. It coming from you and its genuineness and your ability to speak with things with candor, it is necessary and it was really powerful. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, thanks for having me here. It's awesome for me to be here and talk to you because, again, I mean, I'm looking at like just the success from you right now and being able to host something like this. I mean, I've tuned into the majority of your episodes and everyone is a good theme and takeaway. And, you know, hopefully this rambling will be able to communicate to some. And I think my objective for today was just raw. I mean, just be very raw and talk about my life and then let you know that it's going to be okay. I mean, mistakes, relationships, changes, I mean, moving, all those things don't really matter when I can sit here 5-6 years later and say that I'm happy and I'm moving forward and I'm very blessed.
I will close out with a quote from Avatar, The Last Airbender that I thought inspired me before I, you know, let you know how proud I am of you and stuff that I saw today. Uncle Iroh says, "Life is like this dark tunnel. You may not always see the light at the end of the tunnel, but if you keep moving, you will come to a better place." And I think that hits the nail on the head. But yeah, just to close out, really proud of you, man. You're a great blessing in my life. Excellent role model. And thank you for being here. Thank you for all you do in this world.
Yeah, of course, man. I love you too. Thanks for having me here.
I love you, man. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Growth and Jams podcast. My name is Saul. We are hosted by 1718 Media. If you enjoyed the show today, please feel free to give it a rating in the podcast app. Also, follow us on social media at Growth and Jams. Thank you for tuning in.